Leia. Today you get a break from me and you get to hear from our beloved Chit Chat Chick Edie and her good friend Lee discussing, guess who, the boss. So it should be fun. Get ready to learn all things related to Bruce. And afterwards, you're going to have a playlist to go along with this fantastic episode. And I will be back with you next week. Yay!
Hi, this is Edie. And for this episode, we will not be talking with Leia because we have my wonderful friend Lee here, and we are here to talk about Bruce Springsteen. I know Lee because he married one of my very best friends ever, Prairie Sherry. Hello, Lee.
How you doing?
Good. I am so excited to talk about Bruce. And as you know, Lee, this is not a Bruce podcast,
right.
So we're going to kind of have to do Bruce Light.
Got it.
Bruce Light for the chicks and roosters in the coop.
Mm-hmm.
So we're talking about Bruce Springsteen, the boss. And I want to start off with both of us talking about what brought you to Bruce and when.
Well, I got to take you back to the 1970s, the mid-1970s, when I was in college. And I had a friend, and he's still a friend to this day, Michael, and he collected music, and he bought any new music that came out and established this huge collection of mm-hmm. records. Back then, we were playing vinyl, of course, and one of them was an album that he introduced me to called The Wild, The Innocent, and The E Street Shuffle.
Yes!
Now, this is Bruce's second record, if mm-hmm. I'm not mistaken. His first one was
Greetings from Asbury.
Yep, Greetings from Asbury Park. Mm-hmm. Looked like a postcard,
yes.
You'd send if you were on vacation. But this album cover had Bruce looking, it was a close-up, an extreme close-up of Bruce looking very pensive.
Oh, right? So good!
And my friend Michael played this for me, and I just gravitated to it. That's not even a strong enough word.
Yeah.
I was magnetized by his singing, by his lyrics,
mm-hmm.
and just drawn in. And I asked Michael, do you mind if I borrow this record?
Yeah.
And he said, no, you can borrow it. Well, I took it back to my apartment and I played it over and over. And
mm-hmm.
I think played it so much that it got skips in it.
Oh.
So I bought him a fresh copy of
yeah.
The Wild, The Innocent, and The E Street Shuffle. I said, you know, here, I can't thank you enough for introducing me to this music. And that was my brush with the record. And then if you want to know my first concert experience.
Well, we're going to get to that.
Okay.
Though with the Wild, The Innocent, and the E Street Shuffle, I remember that like Bruce brought in the horns for that album. And he has a tuba and it's a big sound. What's your favorite song off the album?
It's hard to narrow it down, and that's almost always the case with Bruce. You know,
it is.
He has such a deep catalog of work. On The Wild, The Innocent, he actually only had 4 songs on one side and 3 songs on the B side.
He was kind of like Dylan for a while, or people were comparing him to Dylan. It was just a lot of words, and they were long songs.
Exactly. The album totals over 45 minutes of music, and it's 7 tracks.
Oh.
I mean, you just don't find that today at all. And so, you know, this wasn't radio-friendly, AM radio-friendly by any means. It was FM
mm-hmm.
music. And I loved Rosalita, Come Out Tonight. You know, I'm looking, it's a 7-minute song. But it was energetic.
Mm-hmm.
It was a great story, and that's what I appreciated and always have about Bruce is that his songs were often cinematic. You know,
mm-hmm.
there was a beginning, a middle, and an end. They felt like you were listening to, you know, a little movie.
Yes.
You know, from start to finish. And Rosalita was like that. The 4th of July, Asbury Park, better known as Sandy.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's, again, a long song, over 5 minutes long. And I'd say those two are definitely, you know, some of my favorites. A couple of probably my top 2 on the album.
All right.
Yeah.
Okay, well, I'm now going to tell you all what brought me to Bruce, and we're going way back again to the 70s, Lee, but
yeah.
I was in 2nd grade, and one of my dear friends, Jenny, she had a little picture of Bruce, like, ripped out of a Tiger Beat or something. It was the one, I think it was something from Born to Run, and it was taped on the edge of her little desk. You know, those desks where the chair was all attached and you'd flip open the lid.
Exactly.
Yeah. And I remember asking her about it, and she's like, oh, you know, that's Bruce Springsteen. And it was like, oh, she had older sisters, so they must have all been listening to Springsteen. Yeah. And so that was when I first heard his name, but it was not until high school that I discovered Born to Run. And this is kind of embarrassing, or maybe other people did this, but every day my senior year, I played Born to Run while putting on my makeup. To, like, you know, really rev myself up
I've never
for school.
Done that, by the way, that's never been my morning ritual.
Yeah, I would put it, you know, put on the LP, you know, Baby I Was Born to Run. I loved it. So, and then after that, I was dating some guy, and he loved Bruce, and then we started, you know, going to all the concerts and listening to, you know, every sure. single album.
Sure.
So I guess it all started in high school, and it was very exciting. I just loved him. And my friends were more into, like, the, you know, like the 80s. What
bands?
Was even, not hair bands, no. Like Tears for Fears,
okay,
and
yeah.
Clash. And they mocked me for
that
liking
MTV
Bruce.
MTV, too. So that would have been, right? I mean,
yeah.
MTV was really big in the mm-hmm. sort of early to mid 80s.
Yeah.
Catching on.
So, well, and Bruce yeah. was a big part of MTV.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, who can forget him in the I'm on Fire video?
Right.
When he rolls out from under the car with the grease on
That's
his
right.
face.
Yeah, he was on the Creeper.
He was on the Creeper. All right, so we've both had a long relationship with Bruce,
we
so
have, yeah.
we are well qualified to bring this episode to you. So here's a question for you, Lee. Mm-hmm. How has Bruce changed since you started listening to him back in the 70s to now in 2023?
Well, one thing that's changed is that he's recorded other people's songs.
Mm.
When he first started out, he was recording, you know, I think exclusively his own song.
Yeah.
He was a singer-songwriter, and obviously still is, but he has since done, like, the Seeger Sessions. I went to that concert. Where he did Pete Seeger songs.
Yeah, you know, Pay Me My Money Down.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
And then now, recently, he's got his R&B record out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and he's got a collection of good soul songs, some classics in there. Only the Strong Survive.
Yes.
And so that's a big change, I think, to see Bruce recording other people's songs.
Yeah. Do you think the change is good?
Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
I mean, I think it's introduced people to music that they, you know, Springsteen fans that they might not have otherwise heard, especially like the Pete Seeger songs.
Yeah.
Those were songs. When I went to the concert to see him, and he was by himself, it was a solo performance.
Oh.
Yeah. And those songs, other than hearing them on his record, I had never really heard some of those songs before. I couldn't tell you a lot of that record now. It's not. You know, it's not high on my list, but it was still interesting to hear, you know, this music that, you know, along with Woody Guthrie is kind of, you know, the roots, the original,
mm-hmm.
you know, roots music of America.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he went through, like, several different evolutions. I think after he was so big and Born in the USA,
mm-hmm.
you know, just, I think I saw him four or five times on that tour. And then he did Nebraska, is that right?
Did that follow? I don't know the exact...
Or was it Tunnel of Love?
Chronology. Tunnel of Love was 87. And
Nebraska?
Born in the USA was 85, I think, 84, 85.
Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe we're getting in the weeds here.
Yeah, we're getting in the weeds, but, you know, when the Nebraska Tunnel of Love, it's like, what is this? That's kind of how I was.
Yeah.
And
you didn't like Tunnel of Love?
Not really.
Oh, okay.
I think because, you know, I probably had some dream in the back of my mind that I could be Mrs. Bruce Springsteen, and I was really mad at him for, like,
you know. I
know
Mrs. Bruce Springsteen. I got to tell you that story, too.
So, I don't know. There was a time, but it didn't matter because I'm like, I have all these other albums to listen to.
Mm-hmm.
you know, just listening to The River, which is a double album, that could keep you busy for days. Yeah. I love that.
Yeah. And your listeners may want to know that that song was a part of the No Nukes concert that was filmed back in, gosh, quite a ways back. But I think you could probably still find that on a YouTube video.
Oh, I'm sure.
And he has a live version of The River. And it's really, I think it's one of his better known songs among Bruce fanatics.
Yeah.
And they love it.
Okay.
We love it.
All right, so now we're going to talk about top Bruce songs, and we will be making a playlist to go along with this episode, so you can check them out. So, Lee, what is your top rocker Bruce Springsteen song? And I don't know the answer.
This may surprise you.
Okay.
This goes back, because I was watching earlier the video for this, because I wasn't sure exactly when this song first came out. But it looks like, based on the video, he's got a lot of hair. You know,
oh, yeah.
Band members are looking more 70s.
Uh-huh.
And it's titled, Ain't Good Enough for You.
Ain't Good Enough for You.
Ain't Good Enough for You. That would be my top rocker.
Was that on any of his albums?
Yeah. Yeah.
What album?
That's what I'm not sure of. Because with downloads these days, you know, I'm cherry picking songs, and I don't recall. So we'd have to do
We're going to have to find that out.
Yeah. Yeah, but the gist of it is that he's talking about his girlfriend, and no matter what he does, he tries to, you know, get the right clothes, he gets a day job, and he still can't win her over, he can't impress her. You know, no matter what he does, it's not good enough for
her.
And it's somewhat comical, too, because of the extremes that he goes as a rocker, you know, as a guy who doesn't normally have a day job, you know, that he's going to the extremes to, you know, improve himself. And she doesn't find it acceptable.
It's not enough.
Not enough.
So we know this is an autobiographical because Bruce has never held a job. I think he painted one summer, but other than that, that's the only job. He's not working in a factory or, you know, working on a highway.
He's not doing any of the jobs that he writes about.
Yeah, those are his characters.
Yeah.
His characters. Well, I'm going more mainstreamly, and my rocker song is Badlands.
Yeah.
Lights you seem out. Underwhelmed
Lights
with
out
that.
Tonight. No, it's I've listened to that song 100 times, I'm sure, especially when it came out. It's a powerful song, you know, and it's like other Bruce songs. It's really about escape, isn't it?
Getting out
and getting away from problems and getting into a better situation in your life.
Yeah,
it's a universal theme.
I think that's why I've loved it, you know, since high school, and I still love it now. It's that theme.
Yeah.
And I love, you know, every time the chorus comes on, I just want to, you know, put my arms over my head and, you know, Badlands!
Yeah, it's got a great chorus.
It is. Oh, it's great.
Great sing-along chorus.
Oh, yeah. Okay. So now let's move on to your favorite Bruce love song. It's not February anymore, but, you know, who's not in the mood for a Bruce love song?
He does have a great song about February called Valentine's Day.
And on Magic?
No, it's earlier than that.
You know, okay.
He's written so many great songs, I don't always associate the song with the album,
okay.
Especially in this day of downloads where you're not putting a vinyl record or a cassette tape or a DVD in anymore.
So what you're saying is I should stop asking you what album it's on?
That would make me look better to your listeners, perhaps.
Okay, I guess I'll stop.
Is this guy really a big fan? But Valentine's Day is a slow-moving song, and it's very moving as well, very poignant song. And it's really one of my favorites. I would also have to say Better Days. These Are Better Days. And that's a song I know he did when he was playing with other musicians. He didn't have his conventional band with him. He took a break. And I don't know if you know the story there, but this is the kind of guy that Bruce is. He took a long hiatus from his conventional band, shall we say, that the guys that were with him from the start.
The E Street Band.
The E Street Band, exactly. Mm-hmm. And as severance, he gave each band member $2 million.
Shut up.
Yeah. Yeah.
What?
That's a story I've heard, and I don't doubt it because
I don't doubt
Bruce
it either.
You know, is a loyal man. Mm-hmm. And they were loyal to him, you know, his bandmates. And so anyway, that song, Better Days, is about how he has, I think, moved out of one relationship and into a better relationship because there's a reference to a redhead. And ooh, that's his current wife and long-term
Patty.
Wife and probably forever wife, Patty. But I love that song, Better Days. Mm. And Sea of Heartbreak, my wife introduced me to that one, which maybe isn't a traditional love song, but it's certainly beautiful. About love.
And he's singing that with Roseanne Cash?
He is, yeah. That's an old song. Don Gibson, a country artist, popularized it. I don't believe he wrote it.
Okay.
But it is a song that's been around for decades, and he does a contemporary version of it that's quite good. Yep. So I would say those are in there. Of course, One Step Up and Two Steps Back, very close to my heart.
Mm-hmm.
So I would encourage your listeners to find that song, One Step Up and Two Steps Back, is great as well.
Well, I had to do the love song... mine is Crush on You.
Oh, yeah.
From The River.
Yeah.
And it's not, he doesn't write like these sappy, you know, like the love songs like Hall & Oates would write, or, you know, I don't know who. But this one is very, I don't, it's very upbeat. It has all that like energy of like new love, you know, Crush on You. You make the Venus de Milo look like she ain't got no style. I mean, if someone said that to me, I would just melt. That's the first one I thought of as a love song, though it's nothing you would like play at like a candlelit dinner.
Right.
So.
Cool.
And that was I had a hard time finding. I was also thinking like Out in the Street, but that's more like it's the end of the week. We worked all week in the factory. We're going to party in the street.
Exactly. A lot of, release, you know, from working, you know, a 12-hour day.
Yeah. Okay. What about political songs? What's your favorite Bruce political song?
There's a small handful. They're 41 Shots. Is definitely American Skin is the official title of that, but 41 Shots is the subtitle of that. My Hometown, Born in the USA.
Would you consider that political?
Which one?
My Hometown?
Yeah.
All right, so I don't understand how My Hometown you would consider to be a political song, because I just take it to be as someone is going back to their hometown. He's full of nostalgia and, you know.
Yeah, I think that's a common misconception about that song. And by the way, it's from the Born in the USA record, 1984.
Yeah.
So
1984.
I got one there for
you.
And it actually paints a picture of decay and degradation of the town where Bruce was born, in Jersey. It talks about racial tension and the economic collapse that happened. So, you know, it does definitely really get into political, you know, matters and socio-political matters.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
All right.
41 Shots, we talked about the relevance of that song today. Do you know the 41 Shots, American Skin?
Yeah, it was written about a horrible incident.
Yeah, it was actually about a young man. He was, I think, in his 20s, early 20s, and he was living in the Bronx, and four New York City police officers, they shot 41 times, hence the title, and they hit this guy, I think close to 20 of those 41 shots hit the guy, and the cops were later acquitted of any wrongdoing.
Mm.
And how many times do we see a news story today that doesn't echo 41 shots?
Well, I remember like a lot of police officers and firefighters like broke up with Bruce over song.
Yeah.
They were mad. The union was mad and they were boycotting him over that song.
Absolutely.
And he didn't back down.
He doesn't. No. Him and Tom Petty.
Yeah. They're not backing down. Any other political songs?
Well, Streets of Philadelphia.
I mean,
it's a beautiful song.
Yeah.
It's a sometimes hard to listen to song because of the lyrics. My daughter, who's a musician, pointed out that it's a rare Bruce Springsteen song in that it's actually in a minor key.
Oh, getting into the weeds here, let me know. Let's get in the weeds.
But most of Springsteen's songs, even if they're about sad topics,
yeah,
they're in a major key. But it just has a groove to it that's almost hypnotic. Mm-hmm. You know the way he's structured the song. And if you know again, listeners, it won an Oscar.
Yeah.
For Bruce and the band. Or maybe just him as the composer, I'm not sure, but it won an Oscar because it was in the film, Philadelphia, starring Tom Hanks, which I would encourage people to see if they haven't
already.
Denzel Washington, fantastic film, outstanding performances, and tells the story about an early AIDS patient.
Yeah. I loved that video, too. It was black and white, and it's just Bruce walking.
Yeah, walking along the river.
Yeah.
And, yeah.
Ugh. Well, my favorite political song, though, I love all the ones you mentioned, it's Lonesome Day. Because after 9/11, you know, we all just felt so lost, like, what is happening? And Bruce tells a story where he was out, I don't know, riding his motorcycle or his, you know, trusty steed, I don't know, and a fan just yelled out.
But for your listeners, by the way, he does ride horses. His daughter is an equestrian.
That's right, in the Olympics.
So when you say trusty steed, it's literally... He's got a ranch and rides horses.
Which is, you know, another topic, you know. Maybe some real Bruce Springsteen podcast will want us to guest on their show.
Hey, you got to have a hobby.
Yeah, you got to have a hobby. But anyway, wherever he was, maybe he was in his car or on a horse or on his motorcycle that... okay, this is in the weeds too. I think Billy Joel put together some of Bruce Springsteen's motorcycles.
Put together, you mean?
Yeah, like built them.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know that. I mean, I knew that they both had a love affair with motorcycles, but
yeah,
there was
some story. But a fan yelled to Bruce, "Bruce, we need you!" And Bruce is just like, you know, what can I do? Well, Bruce could write an album.
Yeah.
So the song "Lonesome Day," I've listened to so many times, and it's just about how lonely that day was.
He uses violin too in that song, and you don't hear that much in rock music, but it works so well. You know, he's got a great violinist or had in his band, Susie. I'm not sure the last name, but yeah, that is part of that song, and it's just makes it very distinctive.
Very distinctive.
Yeah.
Oh, I listened to that album a lot, whatever it was. All right, so now this is going to be a catch-all.
Okay.
What is just any other song you would like to highlight from, you know, The Boss?
Well, he's done a lot of collaboration. And I think for your listeners, you know, if they're younger, you know, they think maybe Bruce is a dinosaur.
Yeah.
But he has, you know, kept relevant and kept current. And he's performed with Lady Gaga, for example.
He has.
Yeah, I was going through some video just out of curiosity to see who he performed with. And these are live. You know, usually he's showing up on the
He's known for, like, just showing up and, yeah.
Does a lot of that. Arcade Fire. Mm-hmm. You know, not that they're that contemporary, but R.E.M., you know, and Tom Petty.
Yeah.
He's done, you know... performances with just really dozens of artists, you know, and so I would encourage people if they, you know, have, you know, their favorite artists to see if they haven't, if Bruce hasn't shown up at a concert and, you know, done a song or two with their favorite artist.
Oh.
But I love one called Broken Radio, and Jesse Malin is the artist there. This is from 2007, and he trades verses with Bruce, and it's a ballad, and it's just a wonderful song. So in answer to your question, that's one.
I just thought of one, Lee. Warren Zevon, Disorder in the House, that they sang on Warren's last album.
Yeah.
That's really good.
Yeah, don't know that song, so I got to go listen
You
got
to listen to that.
And Warren is really not too well, right?
He is not well, but Bruce is just like shredding it.
Yeah, yeah. And that's something, I know this is a little bit of a tangent, but Bruce is in his early 70s now, and his voice is just remarkably strong and mm-hmm. controlled. You listen to these soul songs that he's got on right now.
Really good.
And he's it's just amazing because, you know, his concerts go or did go 3 to 4 hours.
Mm-hmm.
And they're still going 2+.
Yeah.
And he's singing pretty much every single song.
Oh, yeah.
And he's been doing that, you know, since he was 16.
Mm-hmm.
So how he does it, it's hard to kind of wrap your mind around that he's still with a voice.
I don't, he never went down like a huge drug and alcohol and
don't think he smoked cigarettes.
No.
At least not publicly.
Yeah. And he once MTV came out, he knew he had to like get in shape and like get buff, and it seems like he has just kept that. He is like a six pack. People spot him at the Jersey Shore, you know.
Yeah, he's in great shape. And he's also not only kept his voice, but he's got, I think he's overlooked as a guitar player. Because he is such a great singer-songwriter.
Mm-hmm.
He's great in concert. I've seen him multiple times. Mm-hmm. He's physical in concert.
Oh,
jumping
yeah.
up on a piano back in the day, you know, and knee sliding. The length of the stage.
Yeah.
But he's a great guitar player as well.
Mm-hmm.
Outstanding guitar player.
In fact, he said on the Howard Stern show that I watched on, was that HBO?
I think so. I'm not sure.
Yeah. He said that he was underrated as a guitar player.
Yeah.
And I'm like, that's really interesting. I never thought about that. But he's not listed as like one of the great guitar players.
No, he has other guitar players in his band that are very good too, you know. Little Steven.
Yeah.
And he's got...
Nils.
Nils Lofgren, right?
Yeah.
And they've been with him for a long, long time. So he's got them to, you know, to play. But he's, you look at those earlier albums when he was playing lead.
Yeah.
And not having other people, you know, filling in. Outstanding guitarist.
Okay. Any other song?
Did you want to talk about songs that would be accessible to people who aren't
blues
fans? Can I mention some of those? Or
we can do that next, but I first have to mention Jungle Land.
Oh, please do.
How long is that? It's just like an epic. It takes you through, again, from the beginning, the middle, and the end.
Yeah.
And then there's that... a saxophone solo by Clarence Clemons.
Right.
And then that ending, you know, down in jungle and land.
Yeah.
And then it just, woo,
And he's got that full sound that, you know, he really, I think, borrowed a bit from Phil Spector, what they call the wall of sound.
Yeah.
You know, where it's just very thick and there's just multiple instruments.
I love
layering.
It.
Yeah.
Jungle Land, yeah. I listened to that. Oh, I could listen to that over and over.
Blinded by the Light, as we're talking about interesting songs, and that's been covered by...
Manfred Mann.
Yeah, and that's a great Springsteen song as well. And just the lyrics just kind of tumble, and they're clever and
clever.
A little bit mischievous.
Yeah.
You know? He's done doing some of it tongue-in-cheek, and it's just... something, again, you just don't hear that kind of writing in a rock song.
Yeah. Okay, so that was us. The others were kind of like, you know, more in the weeds for people. I don't know that a beginning Bruce fan will want to hear Jungle Land, but maybe they will.
Yeah.
So I am passing this all over to you, Lee. What do you think a new-to-Bruce person should listen to?
Well, I think there are really accessible songs that are radio-friendly songs, and people who are new to Bruce... you could listen to Glory Days.
Oh,
you know,
yeah.
I think that's definitely in there. I think Hungry Heart.
Oh, you know that's my funeral song, Lee.
I didn't know that. I hope I'm not there.
Yeah, I hope you're not there. My son has taken notes on it. They're going to be singing I'm Hungry Heart, and my son Gus has been practicing, you know, what Bruce says, you know, when he's like, come on, you know, like to get the people to sing.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, love Hungry Heart.
Another one, Dancing in the Dark. Which I have a bit of a story about.
I'd love to hear that. Yeah.
That Dancing in the Dark was a song that Bruce included in his concerts in the mid-1980s.
Mm-hmm.
And I was living in Minneapolis at the time. Didn't get to go to a show. Unfortunately, didn't have the ability to get tickets. But he did 3 performances over 3 nights at the St. Paul Civic Center.
Mm-hmm.
No longer exists, but he did 3 consecutive shows, And famously, Courtney Cox
yes.
danced with him mm-hmm. at the third show. And it was her being in the audience, him reaching out his hand, ugh. Pulling her up on stage, and they danced to a bit of Dancing in the Dark.
Yeah.
But the previous two nights, they had stand-ins for her. And one of them was my friend Sandy, who I worked with.
Sandy.
The fireworks are hailing over Little Eden tonight from another Bruce song. But Sandy was a friend of either the band or the crew, but she had a connection to the Bruce Circle.
Yeah.
And so they invited her to sit in the audience, and she was pulled up on stage and danced one of the previous nights that Courtney Cox finally danced the third night.
Yeah.
So she told me the story, and then at Christmas time that year, I get a Christmas card from her, and it's a picture of her and Bruce on stage dancing, and it signed off, Merry Christmas from Mr. and Mrs. Bruce Springsteen.
Oh, Sandy!
Yeah.
I would have done the exact same thing, except I would have sent it out every single year. Why stop? Oh. So did they know Courtney was going to be in the video, or were all three of those girls, like, were they filming it all and they just chose, like...
Well, she was, I think, a minor celebrity. This is kind of pre-Friends, right? This is
yeah,
mid-84, 80, yeah. I want to say, 85, somewhere in there. And so I don't know what her star status was, but
yeah.
she was obviously somebody that was on her way up.
Mm-hmm.
So they chose her for that reason, and she looked, you know...
She was adorable.
Good-looking woman for the
Well, I'm sure Sandy was, too.
She was, yeah.
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 Oh, I love that story.
So, you know, she was, yeah, she was, they looked all looked good on camera.
Okay.
And they could dance.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah.
Well, I heard Bruce saying that his kids mock him all the time for how he danced in that video.
Yeah, he's one step better than John Mellencamp.
Yeah, he's a little wooden, but, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
So, any other songs for our beginning Bruce people?
If you want to hear Bruce singing a ballad, and his voice is not typical Bruce, Sad Eyes.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
And I listened to an interview with Little Steven,
mm-hmm.
and he said in the interview that he thought Sad Eyes, Bruce's voice was one of the better, it was one of the better songs where his voice just hit him, you know, and affected him emotionally. So
yeah, just yeah. thinking about yeah. him singing that song, I can feel it in my heart.
Yeah, yeah. Bruce has that effect. I
yeah.
mean, he's got a lot of emotion in the lyrics, and it strikes people, a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
Huge fan base.
And I feel like we've touched on this, but is Bruce still relevant today for people other than, like, you know, us?
People like who like dinosaurs from
yeah, for the
70s.
Other than the dinosaurs from the... Is he relevant to young people? I know, like, his ticket prices are outrageous and young people are not going to see him. Mm. And, Lee, you know this, but I had to break up with Bruce when he was charging $300, $600 for like a crappy seat. I was so angry
yeah.
because he's richer than, you know, he's got money.
Mm-hmm.
And I really resent him pricing out his fans like me.
The claim is that most of the tickets are in the $100 to $200 range at face value. The
mm-hmm.
problem is that a lot of people aren't able to get lucky and order mm-hmm. a ticket through the usual channel.
Yeah.
And they're buying it maybe through, you know, another market where it's going to be doubled in price or tripled. Or you
yeah.
name the factor, you know. And Bruce has no control over that. Musicians don't have. Once, you know, it gets past the face value, they don't have any control over that.
See, I hear that, but
yeah.
part of me, when I had to break up with him, I just didn't believe it. It's like, he's Bruce, it's his show. Can
yeah.
he do something?
It's a great question. Apparently, they're working on it, from what I've heard.
They've been working on it since the 80s.
Some artists are working harder than others
yeah.
on it. I hope the problem can be resolved, but it seems like there is a, you know, without getting into the politics of it,
yeah.
seems like there's a bit of a monopoly here, or
yeah.
close to a monopoly, as to how you get tickets for, you know, the main concerts that, you know, people want to see, the big arena shows.
So, but back to the question, do you think he is still relevant for younger people?
Musically.
Musically.
Of course. Versus him being a horseman or...
a cowboy.
Or a motorcycle rider.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. I think he's... I mean, he had a conversation. I haven't had a chance to listen to it, but he had a conversation with Obama.
You oh yeah, that, I, right? did, I did. I listened to every every sentence, and then a coffee table book came out.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah. Isn't that at Christmas time?
He's at a Broadway show, and it was a sellout, from what I understand.
Every night, yeah.
He's got a new record out, and we talked about it a little bit earlier. It's music that I think is timeless, and it should be listened to by people young and old, because you know the songs have meaning. And I think, yeah, he's relevant. He hasn't stopped touring, as we just talked about. I mean, people are engaged with him yet. And, you know, he hasn't bent to the whims of the masses. He's not doing some hip-hop thing.
No.
You remember when Sinatra was trying to do the Beatles, you know, recording Beatles songs, trying to be hip and relevant, and it just didn't work. People didn't want that, you know, from Sinatra. And Bruce understands his audience, and he understands what he's, you know, what his, you know, his lane is. It's pretty wide, but he's still got a lane, and I think he observes that very well.
Okay. All right, Lee, as we wind down this epic conversation about the boss, I want to hear just a little bit about the concerts you attended. The Springsteen shows.
I've attended shows, at least one in the 70s, 80s, 90s, 2000. And then in 2012, I heard him in person. I wasn't able to see him. I was at a rally for Obama.
Oh,
in
Madison,
and Bruce performed live three songs, I believe.
Yeah.
And I got there at about 7 in the morning, and he sang at about 1 or 2 in the afternoon, and I still wasn't close enough to physically see him.
People were out of their minds.
They were, yeah.
Yeah.
And he only sang three songs, and I'm sure people didn't expect more than a couple.
Do you remember the songs?
I don't, no.
Yeah, I'm sure feel like I knew them at the time,
I'm sure they were relevant to, you know, an Obama campaign.
Yeah, yeah.
Going back to the 70s, my first concert was in 78, I believe, 78 or maybe 79. He was performing in Madison at the big Coliseum, and I was living about an hour and a half, 2 hours away, and I couldn't get anybody to go with me. I mean, nobody.
What?
Yeah, back then people weren't Springsteen fans, at least the people that I was hanging with. People just, not interested.
Oh, crazy.
So I drove after work to Madison, and I bought my ticket about 2 hours before the show.
Oh my gosh.
There were seats available. And I bought my ticket, and I waited outside, and through the walls of the Coliseum, I could hear the sound check. So I got a little bit of a taste, and then when I went in with the big crowd, By myself. The seats were obviously not great seats. But the seat, there were seats available yet in the nosebleed seats, as people say. And I was there for close to 2.5 hours, and I had to drive back home and go to work the next morning. So I actually left during the encores. He was still performing.
His encores could go on for an hour.
On and on. And he was doing shows that were typically 3 hours long or 3 hours plus. So I thought, my Lord, this man.
This man.
And I mean, in the 70s, he didn't have that many songs, you know.
No, so but they were long songs.
They were, yes, they were. And he was doing Quarter to Three by Gary U.S. Bonds. That was always in his encore. And it's a great rocker. I don't know if you recognize that song or not, but it's a great rocker. And he does a great rendition of it.
I think one of the encores he did when I was at a show was the Detroit Medley.
Okay.
You know.
Yeah.
That was fun.
The other concert that I went to that was very memorable, it was in Minneapolis, and he had at Target Center, and he had postponed it, I think maybe health reasons, somebody in the band. But so he came back, and it was like he came back, like, I want to make good on the fact that I you know, had to move this concert date. And it was December of 1999.
Mm.
And he did the Santa Claus song.
Oh.
And he had Santa Claus in the full costume on stage. Ugh. And again, if your listeners don't know, he does Santa Claus is Coming to Town.
So good.
You probably know it because most radio stations
play it.
Play it, you know, at Christmas and from, you know, Thanksgiving forward. But that was fun, that, because obviously that was a song you're not going to hear very often, you know,
no,
in concert. And I've heard another rarity that he doesn't do very often called Candy's Room. Getting into the weeds again, but I heard that live. And
Candy's
he
rarely
Room. Does that song in concert.
In Candy's Room.
He did Candy's Room in, I believe it was at the 99 concert. Yeah.
But to get to Candy's Room, you have to walk the darkness of
Candy's
Hall. Okay, wrapping it up. All right, well, thanks for your time, Lee. It has been so fun talking about Bruce with you. We talk about Bruce like when we're not being recorded
exactly.
All the time, too.
My pleasure.
Yeah, and I would look forward to maybe one day soon, you know, we could do an episode on Billy Joel.
Mm-hmm.
We could do one
on...
Well, you are not a Hall & Oates fan.
Well, I have been a fan of their... am a fan of their early...
Okay.
Music, Abandoned Luncheonette. And I did have a literal brush with Daryl Hall at a hotel.
Oh, yes, yeah. Save that. Yeah, yeah, okay. That's enough to be on the Hall
&
Oates episode. Yeah. We could do one on Warren Zevon.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
And I'm wondering, is there anyone else? We could do one on Ringo.
Beatles.
The Beatles.
And do some tangents on the different members of the band.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
You could find out what, you know, Lee really thinks of Wings.
Any female artists?
Oh.
Are you a Joni Mitchell fan?
No.
Okay, neither is Sherry. So.
She kind of drives me nuts the way she meanders. But, you know, I appreciate her.
Yeah. Any other female artists?
I love the Indigo Girls.
Yeah.
I love K.D. Lang.
Mm-hmm.
Roseanne Cash.
Yeah.
Super interesting.
Yeah, we've seen her together.
Yeah.
Yeah.
My birthday present one year.
Yeah.
It was so nice.
Yeah.
All right, so cluck cluck, and what else do we say? Oh, bye-bye.